The Shogun sent his ninja spies to our house. They were supposed to kill my father, but they didn't. That was the night everything changed forever.
Kusar, Kusar by Hossam Ramzi.
And we're still in our amnesty, aren't we?
We're still in our amnesty? That's the big pimping break. Everybody knows. Everyone knows that one, man.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, it could still be terrible. We're still in an amnesty, so...
We're still in an amnesty, but we are not allowed to mention Brexit.
Oh, you just did?
After...
You just did. Too late.
We're establishing the law.
No.
That's like saying you're not allowed to kill someone and then...
I haven't killed someone. All I said was I'm not allowed to kill someone.
Anyway, this is trying to sound intelligent.
Well,
right?
You did try.
Exactly. My name's Mr. G.
And I'm Joshua.
And we have got the guest, Sean Mahoney.
Hello, you're right there.
Right.
I'm getting quieter.
You're getting quieter? Why are you getting so nervous, man?
Freezing up.
This guy was shouting and insulting every poet under the sun.
Oh, man.
And we were having to defend people.
We were having to hold him back in a room where no one was challenging him.
And now he gets on the mic and he's just all...
Listen, man, I'm a figurehead.
Oh, you're a figurehead.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, what?
You are.
If you're
boxed in, is what you're saying, aren't you?
I made the box.
You made the box.
I've been seen in one.
Oh, seen. You're in the box, you're boxed in.
My Rubik's Cube. So I was in a collective called Rubik's.
For those who don't know, Sean is a very well-established poet, one of the Roundhouse alumni.
One of the OGs.
One of the OGs.
If you talk to Tyrone Lewis, there were some people before, but they don't count. Nah, they weren't doing it like we were doing it. They were there for a writing course. Yeah. They were there to hang out.
It's like the people before the Bible started, you know, it's just kind of...
Yeah, who?
Pre-Adamites.
Neanderthals, what's that?
Nobody cares, man. Dinosaurs, don't exist.
So, yeah, you run Boxed In?
I co-run with Yomi, Shoddy, and Amina Jamar.
And Amina's meant to be here, but the whole Ramadan thing just...
Really,
she's mad busy.
It's not the whole Ramadan thing.
I said that was no excuse. But eventually...
The entire
Muslim community has disagreed. I said this podcast is more important.
Smooth Eid.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you've got all the time, and also you've done a show, When the Bell Tolls.
No, it's not called that. I've listened to the podcast.
It's not called When the Bells Toll.
No, you fucked up.
I fucked up.
Sean demanded. He pulled me aside,
demand.
And he just says, "Josh fucked up the name of my show. I need to be on the next recording."
What's your show called?
It's called. It's a long name. It's called Until You Hear That Bell, which is a reference to like a song.
My title is better. You should have had me on your writing team.
When the Bell Tolls.
Mm. When the Bell Tolls.
But yeah, mine sounds like a horror.
No, I'm going to get really intellectual now, and you're going to hate me. Yours refers to the poem by John Donne, "Ask Not for Whom the Bell Tolls."
Wow, that's boring.
Now it's officially a poetry podcast.
We've mentioned our ancient poetical references.
Yeah. I'm only 3 minutes in.
I'm so glad that wasn't on me.
So yeah, your show.
I was touring it with the BAC, with the Collaborative Touring Network.
Oh.
And it was in loads of places in England that don't have a lot of like theatre there.
Yeah.
So it was like Hull, Darlington,
What did you think of Hull? I liked Hull, you know.
Yeah, it's well made. Yeah. That was the first place I went to, and it was, I loved it. Yeah.
It's one of those places where it's like one of those one road in, one road out towns. No, it's kind of cut off, but
very ephemeral,
but it's got its own scene.
A lot of places were the same. You've got like your high street with a subway.
Yeah.
And everything else is closed past seven, and all the pubs are filled, and you can't get in to eat on a matter of travelodge. It was a tough tour. It was a lot of, took it to boxing gyms, and schools and community centres.
Well, tell us a little bit what the show is about.
The show is about, I used to do amateur boxing when I was a teenager from about, the first time I ever went to a gym, I was 8 years old. And then I started doing it properly at like 12.
Yeah.
Finished when I was about 19, 20-ish. And it's chronicling those years through times boxing rounds.
Oh,
so
see.
There's a clock behind me. In every single boxing gym, or most boxing gyms, there's a clock which is 4 minutes long. And three of those minutes is like, which is a round.
Yeah.
And then you've got the minute break, which is in red, and it's 1 minute.
Yeah.
And my show is talking for 3 minutes about boxing, and then there's a bell. Then like the minute break is something unrelated to boxing. It's about family, it's about like hanging out with my mate, or I try to make each scene feed into each other, you know, so you can move forward years with it, and it's about 10 years long.
Your show, it was sold out at the Albany, and like me and the whole Kilpill, like, we tried to go down and see it, and it was sold out. And
I tried to see it many times.
Yeah. We saw that little scratch that you did.
I saw a bit of
and Rich Mix, yeah.
Trailers, yeah.
Yeah, Rich. So here's a question we want to know. Have you ever knocked someone out?
No.
Wow.
Sorry.
You couldn't even lie.
I hit a lot of people, and I've been hit a lot. I used to get good, I had a Ricky Hatton. Like, I could get a good body shot in.
Yeah.
Mm. I was able to find the bit, you know, the spot where you could get them and legs just go, you know what
I
mean?
Oh, wow.
So I was good at that.
That's
and I was able to do that for...
Yeah. I know well, the not spot anymore. That can bring you down in one
yeah, yeah.
hand. You can fight her.
Yeah.
You can fight me.
I am one punch man.
I'm no one punch man. I am many punches to my own
back. That was the day everything changed. That's a Shogun Assassin reference, which you just don't get.
Yeah.
Was there any one minute where you have someone in their underwear just hold up a card saying 1 minute and walk
around?
Well, that's
around? I tried to get you on board for that.
See, you never actually spoke to me because I would blatantly have done that. I would have just wore some really terrible
messages,
soiled underwear and just hold up a placard.
I think basically Sean just says, can you arrive here in a bikini? You said,
I wanted us to run some dress rehearsal.
Yeah, mankini man, say no more.
Yeah.
I could actually even draw on some fake hair on my chest to make it even more gross.
I feel like that's what was missing from the show, to be honest with you. You being a ringo.
Yeah, that was been good, man. Yeah. We had a conversation before about the ethics of boxing.
Oh, right.
Like where...
I remember that one. I have listened to some of these podcasts.
Hey, we got more than one fan.
Oh, yeah. More than one fan.
No, but I mean, what is your input on that? Where my heart loves it, but my head goes, this is fucked up. This
Which is weird because it's usually people's heads that suffer from boxing, not their hearts. It makes sense that your head is kind of going, no. And your heart's like, I don't get touched.
Yeah.
I think doing amateur boxing was very helpful for me. I think it's like when you're a teenager and a teenage boy, specifically teenage boy, I'm going to say that. And you, like for me, the school I went to, the life I led, like boxing was a really helpful safe place to be.
Yeah. Why was it safe?
Because you're able to it takes away the want to fight, to want to prove yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're in a place where you're proved and tested that every day. Like boxing takes a lot of glamour out of fighting. You know, I remember there would be boys kind of when school ended and I go see my friends. I didn't go uni and I'd see my friends at nightclubs when they come back from uni. Like, oh, we're at this thing. You go there. And then you'd always get these dudes like squaring up to each other to like fight, you know, because this is like, now I need to, because I feel like there's some weird thing in people that feel like they need to fight or to show that they're strong.
No, every Friday night,
there's some dude, which like, that's me. But it's like, I feel like if you've grown up in an environment where that's controlled and it's not looked at as like a glamorous thing, you know, it's a thing where it's like you work at it and it's, I don't know, like for me, when I finished boxing, I've never had an urge to ever kind of...
So you sort of, amongst your friends at nightclubs, you became like the lone Samurai Jack. I don't need to fight.
That's coming back, Samurai Jack.
It is.
Yeah, Zatoichi.
It is. Oh my God.
The lone Zatoichi. It's a blind swordsman just there like, no, not me.
Samurai... Watch out! Oh, God.
That is so good.
So good.
I remember the
first... I've got on these cable channels where all they play is Samurai Jack just all the time.
I remember the first episode where he fought those cockroaches and he had decimated so many of them. He had killed so many and had come back from the dead and he was ready and he had the ratings that he could see he was going on the last slice. And then one of the cockroach army looks at him and then takes one step back and he goes, no! There is no escape. He just went on the proper.
And he couldn't show blood, could they? So that he's covered in oil.
Right.
And he's just dripping. You know what I mean? And you know what it is. Like, you know if you can do it, it'd be blood. Like,
as a child, you're like, I know. I know what you're trying to do. I played Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
I know it is
great. I had the Super NES version.
So you run a night boxed in.
I run a night called Boxed In. It's a free open mic night.
Do you lock the doors? How can it be boxed in if you don't lock the doors?
Man, I don't.
How can it be boxed in if you don't lock the doors? Do you lock the doors though?
I thought you said love the doors. No, I thought you were going to quiz me on Jim Morris, like name their albums.
What?
You know what I mean?
No, I said lock. Are you saying my accent is wrong? You're being racist now.
Yeah, you caught me. Shit.
Look at Josh, man. First white guy on the show. You want to blame? you want to blame all your pain that needs to come out?
It's all your fault.
I charge you with a crime.
You represent everything that I am not allowed to talk about right now.
I'm more than happy.
Well, anyway, you're boxing.
Boxed In. It's an open mic night. We have features on. And it's it's free. Ends at 9 p.m. which I think for me is so good about an open mic night.
Yeah.
Most of the time, open mic nights finish at 11:45, you know what I mean?
Yours finishes at 9 or it starts at 9?
Finishes at 9.
It's intense. Oh, it's like an intense...
Okay.
Yeah, it starts at 7:20.
But it's intense shot of poetry.
3 minutes. Mr. G, we always have him on whenever you're there. We put you on first and always kicks the mic off right. And then we just try and get through as many as possible.
I think that's really weird just because I've been to Lisbon, one of the few times I've gone out of the country to do poetry, and France. And it's just weird when you go somewhere else and it's they start about 12 p.m.
Yeah.
I remember going to one and asking them, when am I on? And they're we'll have you on at 2:00. In my bones, I was just is anyone going to be here? And then I came at 2 and the whole place was still rammed.
Right.
Because they were having
the
slam.
It's a different culture.
Yeah, it's a completely different culture. Whereas here, it's just and I can completely understand, because I feel that, I've been to other poetry nights and I'm just oh my God, it's 10 o'clock, I'm still here, they're doing poetry. And it doesn't matter how nice the poetry is, but having a night where it's just whoa, 9? We're done?
It's hard because I got to get used to it. I feel I'm still running nights when I'm at them. You know what I mean? I get stressed for the promoters if something's going... before I ever started doing a night, I would go to a night, I don't care when it ends, I don't care how it goes, I'm watching it, I'm enjoying it, it's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
Now, it's this act is on, he's gone, he's doing another poem, that's 2 minutes over. Now when you get your feature on, now that you're going to have to cut them short, or the room's going to be too tired by the time you get to the last act. I'm thinking all these things. I went to a night after Boxed In, Jarmir's night, Spoken, which is a sick night. It's the complete opposite of what we're doing. Do you know what I mean? It's it starts at 8:45-ish, ends around nearly 12, and everyone has such a good time. But for me, it took me half the night just to go oh, don't stress about time.
But you and Yomi are very good in terms of your hosting, in the sense that you're very good at what I call resetting the energy. So if someone comes on and they're mega, mega emotional, pouring out all their heart and soul and everything like that, and the person coming on afterwards is going to be like, hey, how are you doing? Yeah. I'm okay.
I'm going to do a poem about words.
Yeah. But what's good is that you do reset the emotion for each one. And that's whenever I go to nights and I check out how's the hosting going, I would say, okay, wow.
You do that as well, I would say.
Yeah,
I've seen you do it.
That's what I used to do.
What you just do is someone performs, they go off, you just insult them.
Yeah.
So everyone just hates you.
Exactly. I just take it all on board, right?
I absorb all
the hatred
that this world can give. Why did Mr. G insult that one person who was pouring their heart out?
Yeah. Oh, I did something so bad, right? One of the last Chill Pills, we had this girl and she did a poem about, I think she had an affair with a married man. And about 2 years, and eventually it just broke down and she was heartbroken. And as she finished her poem, right, I just played her exit music was, no, 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 he don't love you.
Of course you did.
Oh,
God.
That is that's a special kind of cruel. I remember the first time I even...
and she had to walk off while that tune's playing.
Yeah.
You want to hear... No, this is... I think I talked to you a couple of times. I got featured for your Chill Pill in Soho. Yeah. I walk onto the Lloyd's TSB I was, what the fuck is this shit, man? I don't even know this guy that well. Like, he's fucking ripping me up. Like, Lloyd TSB.
Oh, so
the
funny.
Softest music in the world. Like, oh, man.
Did you walk on in a Hawaii shirt?
No, for the listeners. I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah,
Hawaiian
it's very,
shirt.
Very bright.
Very bright, very colourful, very summery.
It's a very summer's day right now.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's a pity we have nothing to celebrate. Music.
Music.
You have a song to play for us?
Oh, man. Yeah, I do. We're going to play Nutcrackers. Dizzy. Yeah. We were watching a bit of Channel AKA and we were chatting about it, and I was like, oh, I should make that the song. And then there's another song that I'm like, oh, this is also a good song, but.
No, Nutcrackers.
Nutcrackers.
All right, cool. We're having Nutcrackers. Okay, so that's going to be Nutcrackers, and we will be back in the second, third.
Oh, yeah. Because man ain't bumping him, or you, man ain't bumping him, he's bumping.
You know what I'm saying? No one ain't listening to you. Trust me.
Because man ain't bumping him, or you, man ain't bumping him either. Man ain't comforting, man ain't come to Greneva. Man ain't comforting geezers, ease up, man ain't jumping in either. Man just jumpy and eager beavers, shit ain't sunken in either. Man just old school from Gloucester growing, man a comfortable feeler. Back when Iceland didn't even live there, it was Joshua Makeda. Back when gangsters weren't even shooting, man took chunks with that cleaver. Back on Super D, Stone Love Days, yep, Jamrock Sound, Metro Media. Yeah.
Back in the day when I was broke, I was on borrowed and looking out for eaters. Back in the day before I had seven figures and brothers were begging me for features. Back in the day before bloggers and tweeters, before they knew I was a genius. They were the days when I was excluded from school for fucking with my teachers. I was so down facetious, I would leave them with fever, seizures, bunch of holes in my sneakers. Back in the day before I had that brand new Range Rover looking devious, previous I was moving mischievous. None of my girlfriends were divas, making moves was the easiest. Please don't make me get deeper, I was linking Kamika, ass rinking that creeper. And I'm jumping in Caesars, Jesus, bunch of unstable geezers. Bunch of peelers and dealers, demons, they were holding them heaters. We were owning them speakers.
Man came back with that classic crack shit, man came back with that rascal. Moved up with them Rottweilers, and came back with bull mastiffs. Quickly grabbed them six Brownings, went and grabbed me two taxis. Here's a nigga, even the plus side, hollows back with new batteries. Hold up, coming back for you fassies. Better run home, call that prat the new lassie. Dentist straps are too massive, jumped out, pat 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 with two Mackies. Quick jump back in front seat and back seat, Brits get put Rabina and Capri.
Don't gas me, I was on the back streets, couldn't catch me. On a jack spree, they're looking at me like, why you wanna rap me? That's crappy, I was ashy, not flashy, they could've hacked me. All black in my Nike tracky, and I went all out on a fassy. And I didn't make beats on a lappy. Well, you know about Rex in Stratty, exactly. Had a yatty, in Hackney, big batty, a bit scatty, but I was happy, cause you could. Sophia Shan Aki, she didn't clap me, so I gotta give thanks to Selassie, Shafix and UK Apache.
You speak it blowing, better keep it going. Mention Hollow Man when you speak of flowing. Get the mozzarella cheese, get the pizza going. I seen your gully side, now your week is showing. My nigga Dizzy Ross, Dizzy, he's a poet. They hear we drop a track, niggas tippy-toeing. Don't come around a man with your pissy poem. I got bitches on my dick and the lippy showing.
And that was Nutcrackers with Dizzy Rascal and Giggs, all filmed around Bow and Stratford, man. Yeah, yeah.
Poor Dizzy.
Taking it back.
I honestly feel that Dizzy was at his peak at the first album.
You want Dizzy to stay sad?
I feel busy. No, it's not to stay sad. I actually wanted to stay hard, which actually he can't achieve. I enjoyed his albums afterwards where he did the pop stuff, but obviously that had a very, very limited reach, right? He was flavor of a certain year and he brought in a certain kind of Brit pop to rap. But that's passed and now it's gone back to hard stuff. And that's the big, tragedy. Like, he can't go back.
You don't think so?
Oh, he's tried so hard.
But on that track, Nutcrackers.
No, I've listened to it.
Yeah.
Compared to anything of Boy in the Corner. Compared to anything of Boy in the Corner.
Okay, then. Let's say the Boy in the Corner is his Illmatic.
Yeah.
Okay? That's his Illmatic.
But I want his Godson and I don't think it's coming.
Before Godson, people never thought Godson was coming.
Well, we...
Maybe he just needs to get ethered.
High five!
Yeah, I guess no one's gone after him. I think he had that.
Because he's got nothing worthwhile to go after. It's like he became a pop star.
What's the one of
him? But even like Baseline Junkie.
Chilling with Eminem and...
Yeah, Baseline Junkie. Baseline Junkie was hectic.
No, no.
Even Focus is good. It's a good song.
I mean, I'm a guy who used to listen to, what's it called, Hold Your Mouth and Respect.
It's like what we said before. You listen to it on the headphones, right? You go into a club and you hear some...
No, no, no. I remember taking David J to go see Dizzy Rascal in Glastonbury.
Yeah.
And it was just really funny because we were all there and it was me, David J, and this other poet, and we were all there and we cussed the hell out of Dizzy Rascal.
That's standard. That's every rap concert you've ever been to.
And me and the lady who was between us, she kept on trying to take pictures of us being kind of like screw facing.
Yeah.
But it was just funny because David J, obviously me and David J would screw face, and the moment the camera turned on, we'd be like, hey, it's great. But when Bonkers came on, you can't be standing still when Bonkers come on. That bass line was just insane.
Can't take no more as well.
Even what Dance With Me, all of his, that album, the album with Bonkers, I can't remember what it's called, that album is not a bad album.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, we're at a point where the only kind of UK rap I'm interested in is grime, hard grime stuff.
Did you see his freestyle on Sway in the Morning where he did the Five Fingers of Death?
Yeah, but he went old. I think he was doing freestyles from when he was like, he was doing verses from
way
he was
back,
like 15 and stuff. Wow, it was amazing, though. The way he wrote the beat.
No, because he did that.
No, my sister told me that. Yeah. She was like, oh, that's what he wants.
Actually, that's not his new stuff. I heard that before in the doctor.
Pardon me, Mr. Rascal, but I think I heard that verse.
Excuse me, Mr. Rascal. It's Five Fingers of Death, Five Fingers of 1990s.
Anyway, Charlie Intelligent. This is, we've had a really big aside on Dizzy Rascal, but we're all promoters, all of us. For the first time, every single person here has a promoter, which means we all have our horror stories.
Yeah, I guess you could say from different eras, because I mean, I'm like late 90s, early noughties. You're from
the mid noughties, late noughties, and you're just noughties.
I'm saying noughties.
It
offends me.
I don't know what to call it. The tens.
You're not teenagers.
So what experiences, interesting experiences you've had in promoting poetry now?
It's cool because when something big happens in the poetry world, you know what I mean? Like, the poem goes viral, if something happens, it's gonna trickle down to the open mic. It is. There's gonna be a wave of similar poems.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well, yeah.
And it's gonna be shocking, and especially when it's like a bad poem, and then it gets, you know, down to the, by someone that doesn't even know how to write a good, you know, it's just, it can be real bad. One of them is when a person goes on stage and says something really offensive, and then says, what I'd say to that is, that's really offensive. You know what I mean? A lot of the time it'll be a white dude and they'll be like, you know, there are like viral videos at the moment of people going like, go back to your own country. When people say that, it makes me so mad.
Oh,
you know what I mean? It's like that twist. Like, I thought you were a racist.
I'm being ironic.
But you've switched it. But it's like, you're just playing with people's
See, I used to have a big problem with what I call ironic racism. I remember that time where there were a lot of poets that were doing this sort of ironic racism. And I remember getting really angry with one dude. And I just said to him, look, man, don't you think that was like a bit too far? And he just goes, hey, you're not understanding the irony. And I said, look, the irony might be passing me by, but the racism's hitting me in the fucking face. You know what I'm saying, right? That's just the way it is. What was that poem? Who's that? What's that girl? Was it Jess? She did that poem about Michael Gove.
Jess Green.
Yeah. She had a poem. Is it Dear Mr. Gove?
I think so, yeah.
About the education system. And so there were a lot of Michael Gove poems. And it's almost like I'd see someone at open mic and they're doing a Michael Gove poem and they're doing it as if no one's seen Dear Mr. Gove.
We've all seen it.
It went viral. Yeah. It was really popular. It was featured in The Guardian.
There's a poet which has even got a, and I'm trying to tell them, like, but they don't care. Like, what's that? The Anthony one where it's like, this is love and love is...
This is us.
This is us, yeah? This dude, he's got like a 10-minute one, but it doesn't even... I feel bad because the guy's kind of new, but I'm not big on the criticizing it, but when it gets to like 3 years and you're still doing that same poem and it is just like they don't even make logical the jumps are so big where it's like and play is time and time is a process is curtains or something like that. I'm like, what? No, it's not.
Excuse me,
Mr. Rascal.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
I remember when I used to do Night in Brixton, funniest open micers we had was that there was this really, really old woman. She was like in her like 80s and she was blind and she couldn't see. so she had to be led to the stage. So she's standing in front of the audience, and all of her poems were really, really X-rated. All about sex.
I've got a similar, right? Yeah.
And so she's standing there, and she had this poem, and she had this cane that supported her, and the poem went, "I want to lick you, lick you, lick you, lick you," and she's thumping the cane down on the ground. And every time she thumped the cane on the ground, she sort of moved just slightly away from the audience. Like her angle of connection.
Okay, okay.
So first she's standing in front of the audience, then she moved maybe about 10 degrees, uh-huh. Then she moved like 20 degrees. Because she's blind, she couldn't see that the audience weren't in front of her anymore. So the audience were to her side now. So she's sort of like at 90 degrees to the audience, and she's talking to a blank wall. And it literally went, it was terrible.
Yeah. No, but one of the most memorable ones I've had, we've had a couple break up.
Okay.
This was when we started, and our big tagline was A, we charge £10, and B, we sold out every night.
Yeah.
But also C, we perform, it's hosted at a burlesque basement.
Which
freaked a lot of people out. We tried to do a Wednesday night, and when we did Wednesday night, it was like a show split with the burlesque event runners. So
yeah.
It was for mostly a burlesque audience. So they have dinner, and they get poetry, and they get music. And yeah, this man brought this girl down, and for some reason, she wasn't having it. And they were having a full-blown conversation between this man's political poem, and then suddenly she just got up and was like, "Right, I'm done, goodbye."
Wow.
And then the man gets up, goes, "Fuck all of you," and he walks off. I'm just like,
I'm glad it was during a political poem.
Became one of the best poets. Nothing like a heartbreak to bring out the poems, bro. What about you, Sean, man? You know why it's difficult for you? Because you still run a night right now.
I don't run a night anymore, so I'm done. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we just get people.
Come on, you must have had at least one fight. It's boxed in.
Yeah, yeah, we got a lot of rappers down. We got a lot of rappers that ask. There's something on the website that still says acoustic or something. So we always have to turn back some music acts. No, we just get a lot. Yeah, of rappers going, "Yeah, it's a poem. It's a rap and it's a poem." Whatever. Yeah. You're like, "No, man, it's
a rap.
It's a rap."
Have you ever had someone try and battle rap you?
I've never had someone battle rap me. I've never had someone try. I was asked to do that Don't Flop thing,
yeah,
and said no because I don't know. I don't think I could do that, man. I've seen a couple of battle raps at poetry nights,
yeah,
and the audience is so on the poet's side. It's embarrassing to watch. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
The battle rap will be on going battle rap, battle rap, battle rap, and then the poet's like, "You are poo. You are really poo." And the audience are like,
one time we had this night, this guy came up and he just goes, "Okay, here's my CD. I'm just going to do some rhymes over this CD." Mm-hmm. And so when I say press play, right? Yeah, all that kind of crap. He stands up and he's a like well-built guy. Like, mm-hmm. You know, obviously he works out. You know, black guy, shaved head. And he gave this long speech about how he'd gone through like a difficult period of time in his life. He was a dancer, went into stripping, and then he went into drug dealing. And his life went into this awful, dark, dark place. And then luckily, through Buddhism, he found himself and he managed to elevate himself and think upon higher things and just be able to raise his chi up.
And you're like, that above was
exactly, and he's going on and on and on and on and on, and he goes, and so now I'm so glad to be at this poetry night, and so I can just share with you a little bit of my wisdom. And he just goes, track four, and then you hear, dum, it's getting hot in here. So take off all your clothes. My man started stripping.
Whoa!
My man started taking his clothes off. It ain't earnest, right? This dude's there dancing away, and I'm there. I'm the host. I'm thinking, okay, like, how far is he gonna go? Is he gonna go all the way, or is he gonna like pull back? And you could tell he was a dancer because he had all the moves. Yeah. It literally was a guy that is just figuring to himself, "I've got a stage, I've got an audience, I've got a mic. There's music." There was nothing poetical about his performance.
Not even poetry in motion.
Yeah. Luckily, he went down to a G-string. That's how I knew he prepared, because he had like boxers, and underneath the boxer he had a G-string. So when he took off his boxers, I was like, "Oh shit, it's going down, right?" Yeah, and then he's like, "Nah, you know." But then he had to do that embarrassing thing of picking up all his clothes and just like,
and no one throwing any money at
and no one throwing any money
fucking poetry night, and
just walking away.
Any others?
Well, I have had to tell one person he wasn't performing because they didn't call us until they arrived. Like, they didn't answer their phone until he just arrived. And he arrived immediately the night started and he was just like, I'm here. And I was like, bro, you're not performing. There's no way you can perform. You know, we're leaving your space blank. I haven't filled your space. I'm just leaving it blank. And he just broke down into tears. He just started crying right there and then. I was just like, dude.
Yeah, I can't do anything.
Yeah. I've had someone have sex in the toilets while we were performing.
This is what I want to hear, man.
Why was that the third thing? Top five? Someone had sex in the toilets.
Some lame old poet crying. That's standard. That happens at every poetry night ever. Bro, some lame old poet couldn't get on standard.
I'm warming myself up. Go for it. It was just one of those weird ones because this woman, she was doing this piece about... she was doing a piece about an awkward dinner.
Yeah.
An awkward dinner. And it was a really good piece. She was one of those poets who has only one good poem. So we used to do this thing called pre-jazzy, get it? Pre-jazzy, yeah. Pre-jazzy, where we book you for your one piece and then we promise to bring you back. And she was talking about how, you know, say the ham was supposed to represent sex and they're all passing the ham and guys trying to use ham as some kind of subtext that he wants to sleep with her.
Yeah.
And all we could hear was, ah.
How, man?
And just then, the whole audience just literally looked at each other and went, no. What was that?
So,
and then she stopped, and then she continued, and then I looked at. Because again, this is a boiler's basement, so yeah. My first thought is someone playing some kind of sex noise over the speakers? So yes, yeah, look at DJ. DJ's just like, look at my the owner of the place, and she just points straight at the toilet, and then I see about three doormen just run straight into the toilet.
I remember the first ever time I ever went to a poetry night.
Yeah,
I was so scared. It was at the Poetry Caf, and I was sat at the back and I think I was just shaking all the whole time, you know what I mean? And I was sat next to someone and this older gentleman, you know, goes to the stage and the girl next to me is like, oh, it's really sweet. It's a couple. They perform like love poems to each other every week, you know? And I'm like, wow, that's so nice. The two poems I heard from both of them were so sexually explicit.
Oh, God.
It actually eased my nerves quite a lot. But it was just a bit like, and your flowery petals, I will... devour. It was all just like bare, like the imagery was so there, and a lot of it was like entering, and I was like, whoa, yo.
And then they went, your flower ready for my bees, for my bees.
Yeah, like pollination.
And then the next week they went to George's night and fucked in the bathroom.
That's probably how it happened. Do you ever have any of those olive oil? When I used to run open mic nights, like way, way back before I started podcasting, we used to have this thing we used to call olive oil pumps.
What was that?
Kind of like when you try and drink olive oil raw because it's good for you, but it's not very nice. So when someone comes and does poem about a topic so heavy, they absolutely decimate it. Because you were talking about being good hosts. And like sometimes we would have a poet come on and do a poem about rape, which would be odd because it's a dude.
Yeah.
Who would do a poem about rape and it would always be something very graphic. And then everyone's just like, how do we bring this back?
I would play
very long while we contemplate what we just heard. I've had someone do it to us in po jazzy when they had a pre jazzy. I had him come on and he did this poem about pedophilia.
Oh,
and yeah, no, he just... it was one of those things where this was someone who I thought was a friend, and to this day I still feel like he did it just to get at me for not giving him a full set.
Yeah,
he just comes in and he just did this whole poem. He just came in smiley because I want to tell this poem about, you know, it's a friend of mine, and it starts about this girl and how she goes to bed with her doll, and then it tells her that when she's talking about her doll, she's talking about her dad.
Yeah,
right. And then it gets really graphic at the end and then it stops. And I just remember him walking off stage, no one clapping, and me just going,
I feel like there's that element where something becomes noble, but then it also becomes your...
shock value.
Yeah, yeah. It can be for the person saying it in a what's that word, where like it's cathartic.
Yeah.
But sometimes it can be a bit like, look how great I am for saying what I'm talking about in a way.
This is the thing, right? This is what I feel. I feel like on that topic, I feel if it's a story and it's not about you, fuck off.
Why is that?
I feel like if it's just a story, like it's a fictional story, like, oh, I just taught up something.
Yeah. You mean it has to be about...
regarding these subjects.
Regarding the subject. And
I don't agree with that.
I'm not into that at all. If I see someone and it's like, oh, you know, this is just a story I wrote up about rape or whatever. I mean, I just feel like...
You mean to say that someone has to be raped in order to write about rape?
No, but I feel like if you're going to take it that graphic or that dark, and you're performing it in
your problem isn't with their experience. Your problem is with their relaying of the poem.
I've never seen anyone who has done something like that from a fictional sense, and I've been okay with it.
Well, I've seen people that have done that from a real sense, and I thought that wasn't a good poem.
I agree. There was a James Messiah night, and there was this girl, and she came on and she read this poem about being assaulted, and I was like, man, that's terrible to hear. But at the same time,
it's not a good poem.
But I feel like, also, the one thing I feel like has been 100% has been every time I've seen a guy come up on stage and he's reading this poem about this fictional girl or this fictional guy who something happened to them, I always look and just think, you are...
Well, you're always on a high moral soapbox anyway.
My horse, my coconuts.
That thing of when someone... Not that it's not about you, but when you're just trying to like ride that kind of feeling. Cause. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're using that to,
Simon Ish walks on stage, has a kid, talks about breastfeeding. Yes, I'm with that. I'm totally with that. You understand? Simon Ish without a kid talks about breastfeeding. I'm totally with that. I'm totally fine. I'm with that. A dude on stage talking about breastfeeding.
But Josh, if he was a great poet, it's within his ability to be able to transmit that emotion. No. Your problem is with the poem, not the crap surrounding it.
No, I feel there are some avenues where there's some poems where the level of skill is a lot wider for that poem or that topic. Like politics, right? I think every terrible poet has one good political poem in them.
Of course. Yeah.
One amazing.
Back in the day, all you had to do was say, fuck Tony Blair, and you would get a round of applause.
Done. But the amount of people who have good poems about assault, about transsexuality, about who gets to pee in whatever toilet, about the plight of women in Iran, about...
Oh my god! Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Come on, Sean. Bring it, man.
No. I don't want
to. Let's have a good laugh.
There are pieces. There are poems. No. I've always thought that because we used to do stand up. You were further than I was, but I did it for a while.
You could say he was part of the establishment.
Yeah, that's why I never had a chance.
I tried stand up for a year, hardcore. When I just said I'm just not doing any poems and just doing straight stand up, but I found that I didn't have.
You went from a laugh a minute.
What? Yeah, boy. Trust me. It was an experience.
I did it for two shows and then I quit.
Yeah, it's hard.
Okay,
come on, go on, Sean.
Yeah, I always thought, because when I was doing these gigs on the open mic scene, you know, you would hear every disgusting joke under the sun by new open mic acts, you know what I mean?
Mm.
The same thing when you talk about these political things, like, you should be working on your... Like, you can't make that funny at the level you're at. You need to be working at what you're doing. And I think that relates to...
But how do you get to that level unless you try?
You work. You my get whole funny. Thing, you just have to be in the game. You have to be. You're,
my
I,
whole
I
thing
right.
is
I
that people should be allowed to try. If I go to an open mic,
you're allowed
night,
to try. You're
I don't expect the most amazing thing in the world. I don't mind people trying things out, even
me
if
too,
I disagree with them.
Mm. I don't mind you trying it out. Which is why, you know, when you do try it out, I'm going to tell you were terrible. Repeatedly, and I'm going to remember you were terrible for the rest of your life.
Well, you're like that. You're so judgmental.
You
know,
have you ever been shit, Josh?
Oh, I've been terrible. I was just lucky.
Have you ever been good, Josh?
I was Lisa, who brought the KMC zingers into the house. On that note, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to come down to your level and play a problematic favorite of mine. Led Zeppelin.
Okay, wow, you're gonna play Led Zeppelin.
Dazed and Confused, motherfucker. It is Dazed and Confused.
Led Zeppelin, those
yes.
Their age of consent is
Jimmy Page kidnapped a girl who was 14 and was a Roma plant, apparently had sex with a shark.
Shark?
A shark?
Anyway, no, Red Snapper.
No,
sorry.
That's what they call it. That's one of them urban myths. They've just like. Wait. Look, we've all done it. we've all had a red snapper. We're all grown men here.
We've all done it.
You know, our prime minister has fucked a pig. What are we, if not?
Tuna fish, snapper, kipper. We've all done it.
Dazed and Confused, anyway, it's coming.
Okay. Sweet little baby, I don't know where you've been.
That was Dazed and Confused.
And I can't believe, I'm disgusted that Josh has played it. I'm offended.
I thought we had an amnesty.
I'm morally offended.
Are you breaking the amnesty?
I'm not breaking the amnesty. I'm just saying that in general, your presence morally offends me.
Trying to sound intelligent.
I'm Mr. G.
I am the presence offending Joshua Dan.
Are you right? My name's Sean.
And this is the section where we talk about what pieces of art and entertainment we've been digesting over the week. And I saw Keanu starring, you know, guys from Key and Peele.
Okay, right, yeah, go.
Key and Peele, the comedians, Key and Peele. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Terrible film.
Seriously.
Really bad. Like, really disappointing, average film.
What was disappointing about it?
What was disappointing about it? All the jokes were played out. Like, they're two mixed race guys who've essentially made a lot of jokes about being mixed race and being middle class black dudes.
They're on the Fargo. They're two cops on the Fargo.
Yeah, they're the two cops on Fargo.
Fargo. Fargo's good.
So they've made a whole career about it. And their shows, the first two seasons of their shows anyway, were very, very good. And they played a lot of send up jokes about being black and mixed race in a society where, you know, the idea of what black is very defined. You know, they're trying to expand on it. And this whole show is essentially, it's kind of like a twist on the action comedy movie trope. Instead of there being a girlfriend who was kidnapped, it was a cat, a kitten.
Yeah.
Right? And they're fighting to get the kitten back.
So
and
it's like funny for a second.
Yeah, the kitten is called Keanu, which means that the kitten is voiced by
that
Keanu
one.
Reeves. I was watching in the middle of the night. And maybe it's because of that which shall not be named still being on the top of my head, but I did not find a single joke funny. I've been playing Uncharted and Dark Souls so hard. We're going to talk about video games. Okay. Goodbye, Mr.
Sorry,
G.
I'm gonna...
Dark Souls, yeah. Bro.
Right.
Dark Souls Pre-Tree, bro. Tell me you're playing it.
No, I'm not, man. Bloodborne so much. I loved it so much.
Yeah, Bloodborne's a thing.
I finished it and I was like, I did that. I don't need to go back into they're so good. They're so good at the same time. The thing is, when you're in it, it's a full context.
Yeah.
Like the Dark Souls, Bloodborne, Demon Souls worlds are
really difficult.
They're really difficult games. Yeah, set in like a medieval time. And you just die a lot and you fight things. There are never any like cutscenes. You have to make up the context and the lore.
There's no easy mode, nothing holds your hand. Even the simplest enemy can
kill. Some of the creatures are real stuff that you never could have imagined. That's so horrific when you look at them and they charge towards you. And there's that instinctive thing when you talk about boxing, that instinctive thing of I need to run away. And that's always what gets you killed. In Bloodborne, in these games, it's like, all right, I need to fight this thing. You have to like, so you get so invested. Like when you beat one of these things, it's amazing. Like it feels so good.
You know, because I've read a lot of like psychology of Bloodborne and Dark Souls. The difficulties of Dark Souls, one thing that builds the whole myth of it being difficult, is not that it's really difficult. It's just that it plays games with you.
Yeah, because it's
when
not
you
that.
Walk
yeah.
into a boss and you see a new enemy, it's usually how difficult it is, especially when the enemy is huge. Right?
Mm.
And you're going to die because the enemies, they move in a certain pattern, but their swipes will take like half, if not 80% of your life in one swipe. So you see the size of it, the majesty of it, and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to take this down? But it's only by constant repetition, you're like, oh, you're actually quite easy. If I just jump here or move here or whatever. And it's quite different between Dark Souls and Bloodborne because Dark Souls, right, the whole game is all about...
It's so slow.
It's so slow. The whole game is about inching. You got your shield and you have to protect yourself. So you're inching, you're checking every corner.
In Bloodborne, you don't have a shield. That is like, I can see Mr. G's eyes and they're just blazing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's such a big deal. When I found out
Bloodborne,
that...
Bloodborne, you don't have a shield.
Yeah,
you don't have a shield.
Massive.
You have a dodge.
And
you have a gun. And you can get your life back. If someone hits you to take your life, you can get it back by attacking them immediately.
And it's so beautiful.
And it's so cool. It's like when you approach a boss, like,
and
your sword transforms. Your sword transforms. So when you approach a boss, you're kind of like...
Yeah, man.
The worst thing, because the worst thing about most video games.
Are you people real? Are you guys actual real?
Come on, you know.
Is this a bad dream I'm having?
When you get to the boss, when you get to the boss of any computer game, everything that you've learned about that computer game is usually like thrown out the window by like the people that make these games. The rules apply to everything.
From software.
Yeah, from software.
Yeah.
Like those games, the rules apply to every single element of that game, you know? So it's like, it's like, as long as you're willing to adapt, it's really exciting. And I played the Uncharted trilogy in my post-tour come-down time.
Yeah.
And I didn't, like, I loved The Last of Us. I really enjoyed The Last of Us.
Me too, me too.
It, you would love The Last of Us, I swear. The Last of Us, that's a game that I would give to someone that doesn't like games. You know what I mean? I'd be like, look how...
I'd give them Journey.
Journey is such
a beautiful
but
game. That's,
but it's also so far away from games at the same time. At least The Last of Us is like, there are mechanics.
I like Pac-Man.
Yeah, I know, because you're old.
That's what I like. I ain't never played a game better than Pac-Man.
I guess there isn't, in a way.
Pac-Man joke?
No.
Where they said, like, I'm going to ruin it because I can't see the joke very well. But the joke goes like this. They say video games don't affect us. They say we weren't affected by Pac-Man, but it's stuck in the middle of the night, popping pills with bright lights, walking around.
No, Pac-Man, for those of you that haven't played the game Pac-Man, what it is that you are...
We are that old. That actually makes sense.
Yeah.
For those of you who haven't played Pac-Man.
You're a little yellow face where you want to know where all the emojis came from. Pac-Man's the original one.
What's the main character's name?
Pac-Man.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like, not Ryu. It's not Ryu.
I got the idea of asking.
You just run around eating stuff and you get these pills and these ghosts are chasing you. And then when you eat the pill, the ghosts turn blue and then you chase them. But some would say that there is a connection between these ghosts and Pac-Man. People ask the question, who are the ghosts in relation to Pac-Man? Were they former friends that he stabbed in the back? Were they former friends that he betrayed? Were they former friends who he took over their power seat? And that's why he is forever always having to chase pills, and he has this constant hunger that can never ever be satiated because the guilt of what he did to his fellow friends.
Super Mario is about power capitalism.
Yeah. You see, the more simple the game, the more deeper the metaphor.
That's what dumb fucking games that you play, right? That's what Dark Souls is all about.
Dark Souls,
that's the exact same point about Pac-Man. That's why Dark Souls is so good, because it has taken so much away. It's allowed you to read into it so much more than any other game.
Apparently, if you read into Dark Souls and you read into kind of like the subtext behind it, Dark Souls is essentially about a reverse birth. Every single zone you're trying to enter is kind of shaped like a vagina.
Would you say there is a problem with video games and violence?
Yes.
I don't know, man. But as much as there is films and music
it is not
and
an
any
easy,
other media...
It is not an easy question where you can just kind of like... I mean, I'm just being facetious, just going, yes. But really, it's not as easy as that. There is, unfortunately, an obsession or an idea that the only way you can make a game interesting is if it has violence. Take, for example, you look at what Nintendo has done with this game called Splatoon. The game is essentially a multiplayer shooting up, but you use paint.
And you have to cover the face in paint.
The job is to cover the most area rather than attacking everybody else.
It's really fun.
Because they've made it about splashing paint everywhere, they haven't focused too much on targeting and how well you can target.
Right.
So now it's a lot more available. And that's just one way of looking.
When I came up on games, with Donkey Kong, Mario, Sonic, Yoshi's Island, like, and I still search for a fantastical element, just like I do with comic books, just like I search for that element, that getaway thing. And now I've never bought or played a Call of Duty game, like, because those games to me don't have what I want in
games.
See,
I like the Shinobis, the Double Dragons, the Street Fighters, the Tekkens.
There's still some level of fantasy.
But don't you think that within man or mankind, there is just the beast of sex and violence.
And our entertainment reflects that, and it even goes back to some spoken word that we're talking about, right?
And so, in order to bring it back to spoken word, in terms of what you were saying, some performers will do things that are so, they grab your attention through the idea of explicit sex or explicit violence in terms of what they're doing.
But that doesn't mean it shouldn't be done in an artful way that is
precise.
That's
my point.
I'm trying to write that, like, the writing I'm writing now is dark at the moment and it's violent, but it's not, I don't know, I'm trying to do it right. And that's the, anyone, you should try to do it right. You should try and do it.
Okay.
But then games play into that.
Yeah.
And there will be a game you like that is very violent and will have lots of sexual imagery. And you will then discuss its artistic points.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, even take, for example, Doom, right? When Doom was first announced, the new Doom 2016, when it was first announced, everyone talked about how unnecessarily violent it was.
Hmm.
But there is an art form in it, from the way the mechanics are designed with, you know, the visual response that you get from it. Because you are killing enemies to get life and it's all done very, very quickly. And you have, you know, it's very fast paced and brutal. So yes, you can look at that and you can see, okay, this works with the mechanics. This is, what's it called? It's clearly done in a fantastical way. It's like Mortal Kombat, man. The man's uppercutting people and then there's a fountain of blood.
Yeah.
And
it's awful.
That's
yeah.
really, that's not so far separated from any of the violence you saw with Woody Woodpecker or... Yeah.
Well, Samurai Jack. Samurai Jack's a violent cartoon.
We're all chatting about. But at the same time, we do have to kind of look at... I think that's the problem with video games at the moment. It's like there is the idea that that is the main way of making a game that will sell a lot of copies, which is not true, because one of the biggest selling games of all time is Tetris, which is as abstract as you get.
And Pac-Man.
Yeah. And Pac-Man.
But then there was that amazing game
where you don't have to kill anything, because everything that you're actually kind of trying to kill is dead and you're just a square.
But I think that those games... Minecraft. Games like Tetris and Pac-Man are so frustrating to play. They're so frustrating to play. Tetris. There's no moment to relax.
They're easy to learn. They're just hard to master.
You can't master Tetris. Yeah, you always lose.
I finished Tetris.
You can't finish Tetris.
You did not finish Tetris.
On the Tetris on Game Boy, there's like a level 99 where everything is stacked up and everything moves really fast.
The real Tetris is, in fact, if I have to recommend a thing, there's this cool thing called Bosman versus Wozniak, and it's this guy that plays every week. It's some weird thing. I watch it on a Saturday morning, like, just chilled out. Every week he tries to beat the highest ever score on Tetris, which is like some amazing score, and he tries every week for 2 hours. And he just plays it. And he's just talking about it while he's playing it. Like, oh, I did this wrong, I did this wrong. It's amazing to watch.
There's a game called, I think, is it Bastet? B-A-S-T-E-T. It's a program which on purposely gives you the block that you don't need. It's absolutely impossible to play. That is like a weird sex thing. Someone gets off on that.
You know
yeah, it's like you got to have some kind of masochistic tendency to play it.
Talking about masochistic tendencies in video games, there was a Space Invaders clone that was made for PC, except all of the enemies are random files in your computer. So every enemy you shoot, you delete a file.
That's brilliant.
That is brilliant. I'll try and find it.
That's brilliant. So like all the photos is like wedding photos. Yeah.
You shoot them and you're like, oops, God.
It's almost like Marty McFly in Back to the Future where he's like, his photos disappear. Yeah.
So we've had a chat. You haven't mentioned any film or anything you've watched.
Well, X-Men. The only film I want to talk about is X-Men Apocalypse.
Yet again.
That's like a 20-minute talk, man.
Have you seen it?
No, I refuse. You refuse? Singer.
On why?
He was accused
of sexual assault. He's a boring director.
I don't care about those Led Zeppelin misdemeanors that he indulges in, right? What's the problem with Bryan Singer in terms of like what
he's boring?
Let's admit
he's boring.
You know what? I watched the Captain America Civil War film and I was like, this is a good film, but like none of it's hitting. I read the comics, man, and they're so much better on every single level. So I watch these boring films that are pandering and they're and they're like cool, but man, like Jonathan Hickman, Secret Wars, like that run, it's 8 issues long, it's Doctor Doom, like the stuff I'm reading, and I haven't read a superhero comic book, I haven't had the want to, which is quite scary for me because I've had that once since like 2010, but like it's not fun or interesting to me, those films. They're worse versions. You know, the budget on a comic is everything, man. I've got 4-page panels of Space Wars, like, and now I've got Apocalypse with some rubbish CGI set.
Apocalypse looks like a clown.
But Apocalypse's son, the Uncanny X-Force, I think it's called Uncanny X-Force, they do this run with Apocalypse has been reborn and there's a boy and it's the X-Force, and the way they run with this idea of Apocalypse, what he's going to grow into, would you kill him now? The whole like, would you kill Hitler young thing? Nah. Like the way they run him off, it's so good.
Okay.
Sorry for
thanks for
jumping all over my X-Men chat. Yeah, no, I think we'll get into it in the next
episode. Hopefully for another time. Anyway,
this has been Trying to Sound Intelligent. I'm Mr. G,
and I'm Joshua.
And we've had the guest Sean Mahoney.
Thank you very much. For having me.
And we're going to finish off with a track by a group called The Emotions. It's called Blind Alley, which is what we've all been led down over the past few weeks.
Brexit.
You got a tweet.
I got it.